Welcome, my friends, to a new episode from English Plus Podcast. This is the digest from English Plus Podcast, and this is your host, Danny. Today, we're going to talk about a lot of things as usual. We're going to start with our words of wisdom section. We're going to talk about the proverb, blood is thicker than water. And then we're going to have a very special quote about charting your course and navigating life's challenges. Then we're going to move on to our word power section, where we're going to talk about a very special idiom and the perils of jumping to conclusions. And then we are going to talk about a very special word, and that is profundity, the depths beyond the ordinary. After that, in our Did You Know section, we're going to talk about the unfreezable element that defies the cold. And in our Know Yourself segment, we're going to talk about the art of subtle persuasion. After this, we're going to talk about some language. We're going to talk about the difference between beach, shore, and coast. And we're going to tackle some common mistakes we usually make when we use the past continuous. And we're going to finish with our literary echoes section, in which we're going to talk about a very special poem by Phoenix called Life in a Cubicle. And we're going to finish with our spotlight for today, where we will ponder the future of artificial intelligence and whether it's going to be an AI takeover or partnership. So we have a lot to cover, as you can see. I can't wait to start sharing all these things with you. But before I do, let me remind you that there is a great opportunity here with our premium episodes. And yesterday I shared the very first English Plus bundle, in which I put together some older episodes that I created, which all relate to one theme. For example, yesterday was about learn the English tenses. It is a bundle of 10 episodes actually talking about learning the tenses. It's quite an opportunity for you to learn about some topics in depth. Of course, they're not all going to be about language and grammar. There are some others, like 100 Events That Changed the World, An Essential Guide to Your Body and Brain, some word power bundles, and others. If you want to have access to all these and the new premium episodes that I add every week, you can do that by becoming a premium member on Patreon, or you can become a premium subscriber on Apple Podcasts. And by the way, I just added a 7-day free trial, so you can try it before you commit to becoming a premium member. Of course, by doing that, you'll be getting a lot of value, and at the same time, you're supporting English Plus, and you're supporting me to continue working on English Plus and continue bringing you the content you like. You can find the links you need in the description of the episode. And now, without further ado, let's jump right in today's digest episode from English Plus Podcast. I'm your host, Danny. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt an unbreakable bond with your family? The kind where, no matter the arguments or distance, something pulls you back together? Maybe you've used the phrase, blood is thicker than water, to describe this connection. But did you know this proverb has a surprising twist in its history? So is loyalty to family truly supreme? Is this bond unbreakable? Let's dive in and discover the hidden truths behind this age-old saying. Welcome to our proverb, where we explore the wisdom packed into everyday sayings. And today we're dissecting the complexities of family and loyalty with the proverb, blood is thicker than water. Blood is thicker than water. Well, on the surface, this proverb seems straightforward. Family relationships are paramount. They supersede friendships, romances, you name it. We've all witnessed, or maybe even experienced, those unyielding bonds within a family unit. But the history of this proverb tells a different story. Its original appearance in the 12th century German epic poem Reinhardus Wulps actually carried the meaning, the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. In other words, bonds forged on the battlefield were considered stronger than family ties. Mind-boggling, right? Now fast forward to today, and the interpretation has flipped entirely. We use blood is thicker than water to emphasize the unbreakable nature of familial connections. But does this always hold true in reality? Think about those strained family relationships where loyalty and love feel thin. Or the powerful bonds forged with friends who become like family, making us question the proverb's limitations. It raises an intriguing question. Are family ties defined by blood alone? Is the proverb still relevant in our modern world where family structures are diverse and complex? Should we put blind faith in family bonds, or are there instances where chosen relationships might prove stronger and more supportive? Now, as we wrap up today's proverb, I'll leave you pondering one question. When considering the saying blood is thicker than water, are we embracing a limiting belief? Or is there some undeniable truth to the deep bonds families can share? Well, let me know what you think. You know where to reach me. And for those of you who are wondering about the community that I promised you, I'm still working on that. I just don't want to start something and then change it because I don't like it. I'm trying just to make sure that I like the option of the community. But anyway, you can reach me now in the comments section, on our website, on Patreon, you name it. So let me know what you think. I would love to know what you think. So my friends, keep exploring those proverbs. There's always more wisdom buried within. And now let's move on to our next segment within our Words of Wisdom section, where we talk about quotes. We're going to talk about a very special quote that talks about charting your course and navigating life's challenges. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt like you're battling against the current? Like life keeps throwing obstacles your way? Is it possible to change fate? Or are we just along for the ride? Well, the iconic quote by Jimmy Dean offers a different perspective. And the quote goes like, "I can't change the direction of the wind, but I can adjust my sails to always reach my destination." So what does this mean? Are we truly in control of our destinies? Well, let's set sail to find out. Welcome to our quote for today, where we unpack the wisdom of words. And today, we're diving deep into Jimmy Dean's powerful quote about navigating the unpredictable waters of life. Life is filled with twists, turns, and the occasional hurricane. But Jimmy Dean's quote reminds us that we aren't helpless passengers. The winds represent circumstances beyond our control. A difficult boss, unexpected illness, a global economic crisis. We can't change the winds, but we do have power over our sails. Think of your sails as your mindset, your skills, your adaptability. Can you learn to work with that challenging boss? Can you build resilience for setbacks? During tough times, it's easy to throw our hands up in defeat. This quote challenges us to change our attitude. Instead of feeling victimized by the winds of fate, we can take charge and adjust our sails. Of course, it's not about magically making problems vanish. It's acknowledging the reality of circumstances while focusing on the elements within our control. That control lies in the way we respond, in the choices we make to navigate difficult terrain. It's empowering. Imagine two ships in the same storm. One surrenders to the wind, getting tossed and battered. The other skillfully adjusts its sail, using the very same wind to steer towards calmer waters. That's the difference between being overwhelmed and moving forward, even in the face of adversity. Now, as we wrap up the segment, ask yourself, what winds are battering your life right now? And I'm sure you can find some. But more importantly, how can you adjust your sails? How can you harness those very challenges to find a new course toward your goals and dreams? Remember, charting your destiny isn't about smooth sailing. It's about skill and unwavering spirit. So think about that, and you can share your experiences with me if you like. I would love to learn from you. So until our next quote, keep those sails ready for adjustments, my friends. And now we're done with our Words of Wisdom section for today. We're going to move on to our Word Power section, where we're going to talk about a very special idiom and a very special word. So hold your horses, because that's what we're going to talk about next. The perils of jumping to conclusions. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever found yourself judging a book by its cover? Misinterpreting a situation and finding yourself red-faced later? Maybe someone accused you of jumping to conclusions. Ouch. Well, guess what? This common pitfall has its very own idiom. So why do we jump to conclusions so quickly? And more importantly, how do we stop? Well, let's find out. Welcome, my friends, to our English Express for today, where we make learning about the quirks of the English language a breeze. Today, we're tackling the fascinating expressive idiom, jump to conclusions. Jump to conclusions means forming an opinion about something too quickly, often without all the facts. It's like watching a movie trailer and immediately thinking you understand the entire plot. We all do it sometimes, right? But here's the thing. Jumping to conclusions can get us into a heap of trouble. Think of a friend acting distant. You might jump to the conclusion that they're upset with you, while in reality, they might just be having a tough day. Or imagine a misunderstanding at work that escalates because everyone's jumping to conclusions instead of asking clarifying questions. Yikes. So, why are we so prone to this hasty judgment? Well, our brains are wired for patterns and quick decisions. Sometimes it's easier to jump to a conclusion that fits our existing beliefs than to admit we might not have the whole picture. But how do we break this bad habit? Well, here are some tips that can help you. First, pause and reflect. Before reacting, take a breath. Ask yourself, do I really know enough to form an opinion about this? And, of course, be honest with yourself. By just taking this pause and reflecting, you're halfway there. And then, of course, seek some information. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Gather all the facts before making assumptions. And challenge your beliefs. Is that snap judgment based on facts or on past experiences that might not apply to the current situation? And of course, in all of these things, you have to be honest with yourself. So my friends, let's end with a challenge. Next time you find yourself leaping to a conclusion, try to catch yourself. Remember, slowing down and asking questions can save you from embarrassment, misunderstandings, and potentially damaged relationships. Have you ever had a jumping to a conclusion moment backfire? Well, let me know about it. Of course, you can share as much detail as you want, but I'm pretty sure you had a moment like this before. I've had too many of these things until I kind of learned not to jump to conclusions. And here I will have to admit, I'm still learning because I still jump to conclusions, but not as much as in the past. Anyway, that was about our expression for today, but it's not the end of our word power section because next we're going to talk about a very special word, and that is profundity. Don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. Have you ever heard a piece of music that stirred your soul? Or read a poem that felt like pondering its meaning for days? Maybe felt the awe-inspiring power of nature? Well, that feeling, that sense of something far grander and deeper than the surface, that's profundity, my friends. But what does this word truly mean, and how does it shape our experiences? Well, let's dive in. Welcome to our word for today, where we illuminate the hidden meanings behind captivating words. And today's word is profundity, a noun that holds extraordinary power. Profundity isn't just about being smart. It's about wisdom, about seeing past the obvious to a whole world of underlying truths. A profound idea feels almost timeless and universal, making us question our own lives. Think of famous philosophical questions about existence. Those are deeply profound. Now, the word itself has roots in the Latin profundus, meaning deep, and its depth applies to more than just intellectual topics. You can experience the profundity of love, art, music, and even the simplest of moments when they leave you feeling transformed. But it's not always serious. Think of a comedian delivering a joke that cuts through the noise, revealing a profound truth about society. Well, that's witty profundity. Profundity can inspire awe, wonder, sometimes even discomfort as it challenges our assumptions. It's a word that begs us to slow down and take notice of the extraordinary within the ordinary. So, how can we cultivate a sense of profundity in our lives? And here, of course, I'm asking you. I'm not giving you answers, and I would love to hear from you, of course. But a couple of tips for you. Try being truly present. Put down the phone. Pay attention to your surroundings and conversations. Ask questions, explore ideas, and don't be afraid to venture outside your comfort zone. Remember, profundity often lies in the unexpected. And now, my friends, my question to you is, where have you encountered profundity recently? And if your answer is no, not recently, and not in a long time, I'm very sorry, because you're missing out on great things in life that are just around you. Just look around you and you will find profundity everywhere you look. Just food for thought, and I repeat, put your phones down and pay more attention to your surroundings. And I'm not just talking about the places, I'm talking about the people. They're far more valuable than any app you may have on your phone. But anyway, that was our word for today. That was our profound word for today. Until next time, my friends, keep exploring the power of words. But don't go anywhere yet. We're not done. We still have the Did You Know section. We still have the language section. And of course, we're going to finish with the literary echo section. So don't go anywhere, because next, we're going to talk about the unfreezable element that defies the cold. I'll be right back. Well, think of the coldest thing you can imagine. Deep space, the Arctic, your ex's heart. I'm just kidding here. Well, believe it or not, my friends, there is a substance that laughs in the face of all that coldness. Ever heard of helium? Well, you know, the stuff in balloons. It turns out it is the ultimate rebel of the periodic table. So why doesn't helium freeze, even at the most mind-boggling low temperatures? Well, let's find out. Welcome, my friends, to our Did You Know section for today, where we unravel the most fascinating facts and answer those burning questions. And today we're venturing into the wonderfully weird world of chemistry and super cold substances. Now, we all know that when things get cold, they freeze, right? Water turns to ice, your nose feels like it might fall off, but helium? Not a chance. It remains a liquid. Even when we approach temperatures colder than deep space, place called absolute zero. Well, this is where it gets fascinating and a little nerdy, so buckle up. Well, the reason lies in quantum mechanics. Even at absolute zero, things aren't completely still. Tiny particles have something called zero-point energy. This motion is usually too tiny to matter, but helium is special. It's really light, and its atoms are extremely weakly attracted to each other. That means its zero-point energy is strong enough to keep it in a liquid state, sort of jiggling around and refusing to form a solid, no matter how cold it gets. Now, I know what you're thinking. Okay, but I can't exactly test super-cold helium in my kitchen. Well, fair enough. But helium's unique, unfreezable property has massive real-world implications. It's essential for things like MRI machines and powerful telescopes. So the next time you see a helium balloon, remember, it hides a secret power within it, the power to defy the laws of freezing. It makes you wonder, what other seemingly ordinary things might have extraordinary secrets waiting to be uncovered? Well, that was our Did You Know for today, my friends. And don't forget to keep on asking those questions. Don't you ever lose your curiosity, even if it sounds childish at times. Well, that's the best thing we have as humans. But anyway, that was the Did You Know segment. Next, in our Know Yourself segment, we're going to talk about the art of subtle persuasion. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever found yourself agreeing to something you didn't initially intend to? Maybe signing up for a free trial that magically turned into a subscription? Or helping a friend move when you just popped in to say hello? Well, there might be a hidden force at play here. A psychological trick called the foot-in-the-door technique. So, how does it work? Could you be unknowingly using it too? Well, let's get into it. Welcome to Know Yourself, my friends, the segment about unraveling the fascinating dynamics of human behavior. And today we're exploring a persuasion strategy as sneaky as its name suggests, the foot-in-the-door technique. Now, here's the gist. It's all about escalation. Imagine someone asks you for a small favor, like lending them a few bucks. It's easy to say yes, right? Well, the clever part is, once you agree to that small thing, you're more likely to agree to a larger request later on. Think of it like this. You've opened the door a crack, and now they can nudge it fully open. Well, why does this seemingly simple trick work so well? Well, there are a few psychological factors at play. First, there's consistency. We want to appear consistent with our past actions. Saying yes once makes saying no later feel uncomfortable. And there's the self-perception. That initial small yes subtly shifts how we see ourselves. We start thinking, hey, I'm the kind of helpful person who does favors. That makes further favors feel more natural. Now, don't worry, it's not sinister brainwashing. Think salespeople. They might ask a potential customer a small question at first, like, what are you looking for today? Getting that first yes makes it easier to lead into a sales pitch later on. The foot-in-the-door technique pops up everywhere, fundraisers, negotiations, even within friendships. It's important to be aware of it, both so you can use it effectively, well, ethically of course, and avoid being unknowingly swayed. Here's where it gets interesting. Do you ever use a similar strategy unintentionally? Maybe asking for a little advice before seeking a bigger favor? Being mindful of these tactics helps us understand our own behavior and the subtle forces that shape our decisions. So, next time you face a request, pause and ask yourself, is this a foot in the door? Well, let me know, my friends. I would love to learn from you. And that'll be the end of our Did You Know section. Until next time, keep on exploring the fascinating world within. But of course, we're not done. We still have the language section coming up next. We're going to find out the difference between beach, shore, and coast. Do you want to know? Stick around. I'll be right back. Have you ever mixed up the words beach, shore, and coast? Well, we all did at some point. Maybe you've used a picture of waves crashing on a sandy beach as an example of the coast. Well, guess what? You're not alone. These seemingly interchangeable words have surprisingly distinct meanings. So what's the difference, and how do we use them like a pro? Well, let's dive in. Welcome to English Usage, my friends, where we demystify the delightful quirks of this language we all love. And today we're navigating the nuances of seaside vocabulary. Get ready to make waves with your word choice. Now let's unpack these three words. Let's start with beach. Now picture that vacation spot. A beach is a sandy or a pebbly area where the land meets the water, ocean, sea, or lake, whatever. It's where you sunbathe, build sandcastles, and dip your toes in the waves. The shore is a little bit different. This is the broader zone where land and water meet. It can be sandy, rocky, or even muddy. The shore includes the beach, plus the area extending a bit further inland. It's where those lovely beachside restaurants and seaside towns often are. And then there's the coast. Well, when we get to the coast, think geography. The coast is a big picture term. It's the strip of land bordering the sea or ocean. It can vary in terrain and include everything from beaches to towns, ports, and even cliffs. So here's a quick tip. If you can walk barefoot on it, it's a beach. If those flip-flops are still useful, but it's not quite the seaside paradise of your dreams, it's probably the shore. And if you're talking regional geography, well, it's the coast. So the next time you're admiring a seaside view, try to identify the different elements. Where's the beach end and the shore begin? Where's that coast stretching out? Practicing this distinction will refine your English and give you a newfound appreciation for your diverse coastline landscapes. Now go forth, my word explorers, and conquer those beach, shore, and coast descriptions with confidence. Until next time, happy world wrangling. But it's not the end, because next we're going to talk about the past continuous and some mistakes we make using the past continuous. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Well, have you ever caught yourself saying something like, I was knowing him for years, or I was not understanding the question? Well, there's a sneaky little grammar gremlin at work here, and it loves messing with the past continuous tense. So what's the problem, and how do we fix this common blunder? Well, let's untangle it. Welcome to Common Mistakes in English, my friends, where we turn those everyday language slip-ups into confident communication. And today we're tackling the perplexing world of the past continuous tense. Now, remember, the past continuous has a specific formula. There's the subject, there's the auxiliary verb was or were, and there's the verb plus ing. It's used to describe an action in progress at a specific time in the past. For example, I can say, I was watching a movie when you called. Here's where things get tricky. Sometimes you see people using them with stative verbs. Well, this is a problem. Stative verbs describe states of being, not actions. Think, feel, know, understand, and believe. You can't say, I was believing you. Because belief is a state, not a continuous action. Instead, use the simple past tense, I believed you. And there are times when we confuse the past continuous with the past simple. Sometimes we get tripped up and use the past continuous when simple past is correct. For example, yesterday it rained when I was walking the dog. Well, here, I'm not saying it's wrong. Of course, it can be right, but it's kind of confusing. What do you mean it rained when I was walking the dog? Well, you were doing something and it rained like for a couple of seconds and stopped? That's what you mean? It doesn't make any sense, right? Maybe you want to say it was raining when I walked the dog. Or even you can use both in past continuous. You can say yesterday it was raining when I was walking the dog. You can do that. Now remember, it all depends on what you want to say. Sometimes the grammar is not wrong, but it's just confusing. Unless this is exactly what you want to mean. So you have to say what you want to say with purpose, not just use any tense. And there's another common mistake, and that has to do with forgetting about the magic words. Well, the key to this tense is the was and were, the auxiliary verbs. Forgetting this leaves you with strange sentences like, I walking down the street. Well, there's definitely something wrong about this. There's no was here. I was walking down the street. We can't just say, I walking down the street. always remember your was and were with the past continuous. Well, the best way to master this is to be mindful of the time frame. Focus on whether your sentence describes an ongoing action at a specific past moment, that's the past continuous, or when you talk about a completed action, you can use the simple past. Can you think of similar mistakes you've heard or even made yourself? Well, let me know. And by the way, before I move on to the next section, let me remind you that I just published a full bundle of episodes, which is about like 4 hours of content. It's all about the tenses. And very soon, I'm even going to put that on Patreon that you can get separately. It comes with all those episodes plus a workbook you can use. So my friends, if you're really interested in that, check it out on my Patreon page. But now it's time to move on to my beloved section, Literary Echo section. That's coming next. We're going to talk about a very special poem by Phoenix, and it's called Life in a Cubicle. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt the monotonous hum of routine buzzing in your ears? Seen your life reflected in the blank stare of a computer screen? Felt a nameless longing stirring beneath a seemingly ordinary day? Well, if so, then today's poem, Life in a Cubicle, speaks directly to you. Is the speaker trapped or finding solace amidst the mundane? Well, let's journey into their world and discover the hidden power within everyday moments. Welcome to our poetry section, where we explore the depths of feeling and thought hidden within the written word. And today we're dissecting this evocative piece, Life in a Cubicle by Phoenix. Ready to dive in? Well, before I share in some thoughts about the poem, let me share the poem with you first. Life in a Cubicle. She rests her head, so heavy, so wearied on her fist, looking at her screen, or way beyond the words she tries to translate. Or should she translate the signs? That paper copy as plan B when too long have the eyes been fixed on inkless words till no longer the eyes could see. A little bit of substance, a tangible meaning for today, and a tomorrow that's already seen as yesterday. Her graceful fingers touch upon the paper like the wind, stripping an old tree from its dying leaves. Yet to shine again, there is still ahead a long winter. And words like splinters cut through all her senses and the vestiges left from her femininity, not there today. Her hail held up like an uprising, revolting against nobody, setting out to go nowhere, yet a pencil striking through. All that serenity amidst a revolution where a hair is fighting a hair. That long neck appears like a trunk that could carry the world, contracted in a cubicle, a cell soon to be called home. All the seasons drop on her like fruits so tropical, and waves of heat and cold bury her 20-ish body old. She keeps fluttering and covering herself up, yet the weather is way deeper in her heart. It's the same hot and cold, the so-called clouds are but a mere veil to a heart. Dry, thirsty to some heavy rain to quench a desert, and some little tiny flowers can grow on her lawn again. She decides to go, all is planned ahead, wishing that water dispenser could drip into her cup like a patient's serum she could count them drop by drop. She returns triumphant, but barely a minute or two have passed. Positive, my girl so smiles and re-sits on her chair, planning for the next big event when she could rid of what she got. Like life, all goes from spot to spot, no spot is filled until another's abandoned. Like hearts, with so many dwelling, and one place of honor, and thrones are pushed aside everywhere. All life in a moment, so fathomed like water splashing into your face, so sudden, so refreshing, you've been cautious away from the shore, yet you don't mind getting wet, bringing down your sand castle. Tomorrow's another day. You could always rebuild anew. Perhaps the girl's not doing all or any of that. Perhaps it's just me, so living in a cubicle, seeing all that. So dying in a cubicle, imagining all that. Amusing myself with a new story to get by another day. Well, I'm sorry, my friends, if that's kind of what you feel, especially if you work in a cubicle. But anyway, from the opening lines, we feel a crushing weight descend. She rests her head, so heavy, so wearied. This isn't simply physical exhaustion. It's a heaviness of the soul. Her eyes strain, searching for meaning amidst the digital haze. That's a profound disconnect, underscored by lines like inkless words and tangible meaning. Nature becomes a counterpoint, fingers like wind, stripping leaves from a dying tree. There's hope in this image. Winter hints at rebirth. But the poem turns bleak. Words become splinters, cutting through all that's soft and feminine within her. Her rebellion is silent, internal. The seasons descend on her, not just weather, but the relentless march of time, aging her young body. Yet amidst the despair, there's a flicker of spirit. She keeps fluttering. There's a defiant thirst beneath the quiet, dry, thirsty to some heavy rain to quench a desert. Now suddenly the mundane bursts with drama. Trips to the water cooler become quests for survival. Seconds turn into minutes. But humor cracks through. She plans her escape only to return almost immediately. That tiny rebellion snuffed out for now. Now the poem ends on an even bolder image. Heart splashing water to the face. It's disruptive, cleansing, breaking away from careful shores. We build, we destroy, we build again. Life is that constant flux of change. But the final twist is masterful. Is the speaker merely projecting her own inner turmoil onto the observed girl? The cubicle becomes a metaphor for our own confined perspectives. Are we trapped by them, or are we the sole creators of our stories? Well, as the poem echoes within you, ask yourself, do your daily routines feel suffocating, or are they fertile ground for unexpected growth? Where might you find flashes of resistance and defiance within your seemingly ordinary life? And perhaps most importantly, how is your own perspective shaping the very story you live? So my friends, keep all these questions in mind, and of course, I would love to hear what you think. I would love to learn from you. Until next time, let the power of poetry stir your thoughts and stir your soul. But that's not the end of today's episode. We still have just one segment left. That's our spotlight for today. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Imagine a world where machines think for themselves, learn and adapt faster than we ever could. A world where the line between human and artificial intelligence blurs. Is this the stuff of science fiction or our inevitable future? Will superior AI leave us obsolete or usher in a new age of progress? But let's dive headfirst into the fascinating debate. Will artificial intelligence ever surpass human intelligence? Well, some of you might say it already has. Some of you might say not yet. And some of you might say it's impossible. I don't have the answer for that, but of course it's what Spotlight is all about, where we illuminate complex issues and challenge conventional thought. And today, Spotlight shines on artificial intelligence and the profound question of its ultimate potential. Now, AI is already here. It drives our cars, well, sometimes. It recommends what we watch, even translate languages in real time, and a lot more, of course, for those of you who are already using ChatGPT and other AI platforms. But there's a crucial distinction to make. Today's AI is narrow, still narrow, even marvelous, but it's still narrow, incredibly good at specific tasks, but not at everything, not yet. What about general intelligence, that uniquely human cocktail of reasoning, creativity, and complex problem solving? Experts are still divided. Some believe AI will inevitably reach and even surpass our intellectual capabilities. They point to the exponential growth of computing power and the ability of AI to learn from vast data sets far beyond what our brains can manage. Others are more skeptical. They argue that genuine consciousness, true understanding, and the emotional nuances that shape human thought may be forever beyond AI's grasp. Well, this camp believes AI will be a powerful tool, but not a replacement for human ingenuity. But here's where it gets truly fascinating. Could AI revolution lead to something altogether new? A kind of hybrid intelligence, combining the strengths of both human and machine? Well, that, my friends, leads us down ethical rabbit holes. What would this mean for our identity, our values, the very concept of what it means to be human? Well, the rise of AI raises questions too big to answer in a single podcast, of course, and that's the point of Spotlight, right? So instead of doing this, let's turn to the question inward. How do you feel about the possibility of our own intellectual obsolescence? Is this fear-mongering or a real threat we need to address? And perhaps more importantly, how can we ensure that whatever the future holds, AI development is guided by our core human values, empathy, fairness, and a deep respect for life in all its forms? Or maybe AI can respect those human values a lot more than we do ourselves. Because you know how we turn a blind eye sometimes to those core human values. Or we're kind of biased, you know, just we use them in some situations and in some other situations we don't even think about them. But anyway, let's focus on AI and this question. Well, I want you to think about that and maybe share what you think with me. I would love to learn from you. So my friends, until our next spotlight, let's keep pondering the big questions and shaping the world we want to live in. And with that, we come to the end of today's episode. I would like to thank you very much for sticking around, and I hope you learned a thing or two from today's episode, and of course, above all, you had a good time listening to this podcast. Don't forget that you can get a lot more. All our premium content is available for our Patreon members, or if you would like, you can just become a premium subscriber on Apple Podcasts and listen to all our premium content. You can find the links you need in the description, or you can do it directly from your Apple Podcasts app. With that being said, I would like to thank you very much for listening to another episode from English Plus Podcast, to another digest. This is your host, Danny. I will see you next time.